Hello everyone, welcome to another episode of Gaming the World. Today, we've come to Jilin Province. We always visit museums wherever we go, because visiting museums is the best shortcut to understanding the history of a place. Reading books is static. The names and terms feel distant and hard to remember. This time, we visited the Jilin Provincial Museum, which is quite remote, more than 10 kilometers from the main urban area. The museum was quite empty, and we were a bit disappointed, but it did introduce some ancient history of the Jilin region, which left an impression. Before, when reading history books, I knew that there were many ancient kingdoms in northeast China, such as Fuyu. Now, the museum initially suggests that the earliest civilized ancient dynasty in Jilin was Fuyu. But who were the Fuyu people? Even the academic community is a bit unclear, because the records about them are too scarce. The written records are only fragmented, found in works like the Book of Later Han and the Records of the Three Kingdoms, which only record some very limited information, such as Cao Cao's attempts to attack them or the information gathered by Cao Cao's envoys. We only know that the Fuyu people seem to be descendants of the Dongyi people, and they were particularly tall and strong. They had a cultural system, laws, and weapons. They also had some bronze artifacts and masks. However, overall, there are extremely few artifacts. There are hardly any records of their organizational structure, or even their writing system. There isn't even any skeletal material for DNA analysis. It is also very rare, so it is a very mysterious ancient civilization. Some scholars in Japan even speculate that the Buyo people were actually the ancestors of the Japanese, that they migrated eastward to Japan and established a dynasty. However, all of this is still speculation. We only know that Buyo was later destroyed. By whom was it destroyed? It was destroyed by the Goguryeo people. The Goguryeo people also established their own dynasty. The main archaeological excavation site of this dynasty is in Jian, Jilin province today. A large number of imperial palace ruins have been unearthed there, but only the foundation remains. This foundation is located in a mountain with excellent feng shui. The mountain forms a C-shape, like a screen protecting the capital city. In the southeast corner of the capital city is their royal tomb. The shape of the tomb is very interesting. Can you guess what it looks like? It looks like a pyramid. We will go there later to explore it. You can see that their civilization and capital city were not very large. Why? Because the northeast region was too cold at that time. Due to geographical constraints, they could not support such a large population. Because the weather was too cold and resources were too scarce, they were a civilization with a relatively small population. Therefore, they also began to move their capital southward, from Anxi to Pyongyang. Pyongyang became their most important capital. Pyongyang has also been a place where various civilizations converged since ancient times, but it was a place where many civilizations once passed through. Later, both Koreans and North Koreans tried to prove that Goguryeo was a very developed ancient civilization, and that the artifacts from Goguryeo were very valuable. This even led to a particularly famous tomb robbery case, where many artifacts were stolen and sold to South Korea. I will talk about this in detail when I have the opportunity. Actually, the most interesting thing is a tomb, the tombs of the Goguryeo monarchs. Their tombs also adopted the concept of ascension to immortality from the Han Chinese civilization of the Central Plains. The ascension murals in their tombs are very similar to some Western Han tombs we have seen. There are also the four mythical creatures, Vermilion Bird, Black Tortoise, Azure Dragon, and White Tiger. In particular, the White Tiger is painted very terrifyingly. If you were to use this material directly for a horror movie, I think it would be quite scary. The wooden ceiling also depicts an azure dragon carrying the tomb owner flying to immortality. Below the azure dragon are two figures, a man and a woman, who are very important symbols. These figures represent immortals who can lead the deceased to ascension. This tomb completely uses the Chinese system of immortals for its decoration, which also shows that this technique of ascension to immortality had already spread to Goguryeo. After Goguryeo, what came next? It was the Balhae Kingdom. This is actually a civilization in northeast China, either originating from the Changbai Mountains or the Daxinling and Shaoxinling Mountains, one in the south and one in the north, the southern and northern Manchuria. These two areas produce the Balhae Kingdom in the northern region. The Balhae Kingdom existed during the Tang Dynasty. The scope of Balhae was varied. The Bohai Kingdom was vast, encompassing areas that are now part of North Korea and parts of Russia. Please note that at that time, Lake Khanka, for example, was entirely within the territory of the Bohai Kingdom. Lake Khanka is very large, but now China only owns about a quarter of it. This small area was where the Bohai Kingdom had access to the sea. Furthermore, for an ancient civilization to flourish, it needed to be near sacred mountains or forests to cultivate the spiritual energy necessary to establish the foundations of their civilization. After the Bohai Kingdom, the museum jumps directly to the Northeast Anti-Japanese War era, skipping over more than 1,000 years. There's a complete gap in the exhibition, it doesn't show anything from that period. The Anti-Japanese War was actually fought by two groups of people, divided into North and South. The Northern group included the famous General Yang Jingyu, who was in Northern Manchuria. If they couldn't defeat the Japanese in Northern Manchuria, they could immediately retreat into the Greater Khingan Mountains and the Lesser Khingan Mountains, and then escape to the Soviet Union to survive. However, the resistance in Southern Manchuria was extremely difficult because they were completely surrounded by the Japanese on all sides. Korea was Japanese territory, and the area north of Changbai Mountain was also Japanese territory. They could only hide in the remote areas of the Changbai Mountains, enduring extremely harsh conditions. Therefore, their resistance lasted only a few years before they were all killed by the Japanese, most notably Yang Jingyu. As a result, the entire history of the Anti-Japanese War, the accounts are fragmented and incomplete, and there are very few survivors. As for a very famous general named Zhou Baozong, after the founding of the People's Republic of China, Premier Zhou Enlai gave him a task. He had to figure out the history of the Northeast Anti-Japanese United Army, because there were so few survivors. Many of those incredibly brave and passionate stories have been forgotten. Nobody knows them anymore. It was only gradually discovered that the stories within this history are truly shocking and represent a remarkable display of human courage and spirit. However, there are relatively few literary works, films, and books written about the Northeast Anti-Japanese United Army. Then, regarding important places to see in Changchun, I recommend two ways to experience it. One is to take what they call a small train in Changchun. You can board it across from the Changchun Electric Power Plant. It's somewhat of an imitation, perhaps of the small trains used during the Manchukuo era, I don't know for sure, but it looks very much like the expensive trains that Zhang Zuolin rode in the 1930s in the movies. You can take a round trip for an hour on this tram. These trams are rare in China, very few places still have them. The second thing I recommend, and I recommend it even more strongly, is because Manchukuo had many magnificent buildings. The Japanese spent a lot of money and resources in Changchun, which was formerly called Xinjiang, building many magnificent structures. The city's architectural layout is concentrated on two streets, one called Xinmen Street and the other Renmen Street. Renmen Street is a bit longer, while Xinmen Street is shorter and more concentrated. Xinmen Street is where the legendary Eight Ministries are located, referring to the eight ministerial buildings built by the Japanese during their occupation. Changchun, during the Manchukuo era, was called Xinjiang, New Capital. Why, New? Because the Japanese truly considered Northeast China their colony, and deep down, they considered it their overseas territory, an integral part of their homeland, and they built it as such. Therefore, they wanted to establish a second capital in Changchun. Xinjiang was completely redesigned and constructed from scratch, because before that, Changchun was a place with little history and few man-made structures. They built it on a blank slate, adopting the latest urban planning concepts of the time, resulting in an exceptionally magnificent city. At that time, Two regimes in the world were planning their magnificent capitals. One was the Nazis, who were also planning a very grand new capital, but it was never completed. However, the Japanese succeeded in building theirs. Therefore, they spared no expense in building each of their buildings. Although they weren't tall, you can see that these buildings might only be 5 or 6 stories high. Each floor had a very high ceiling. I checked the data, and the highest ceilings could reach 4, 5, or even 6 meters, making them very tall buildings. Moreover, they used very sturdy reinforced concrete as the building material. The main structures are now very sturdy and solid. Besides government buildings, such as the Kwantung Army Headquarters, Treasuries, and the Ministry of Justice, they also built many ceremonial buildings like shrines. For example, they would place statues of Japanese Sengoku period warlords in the middle of the squares, and statues of figures like Yamagata Eritomo and others in the city. However, these were later demolished because they were products of colonialism. The so-called East Asian architecture, simply put, means the main body of the building is European in style. Resembling large government buildings in England or France. But their roofs use classical Japanese architecture. Many of these large buildings have roofs that look very much like the Tenshukaku, castle tower, exactly like the one in Osaka. Exclamation mark. The building that used to be the Kwantung Army headquarters is now the Jilin Provincial Party Committee building. At first glance, you might think you've arrived in Osaka and are looking at the Tenshukaku. Many scenes made me wonder, is this Northeast China? Because friends who frequently visit Japan would think, isn't this the Tokyo Metropolitan Government Building? Isn't this like the Nagoya City Hall? Quote, because they look almost identical. Some even resemble the Kyoto Prefectural Government Building. Because many of the architects were the same group of people, the buildings are very similar. The most robust building was the Treasury, which was said to be the largest treasury in Asia, housing a vast amount of wealth. There was a lot of gold. Where did this gold come from? Do you remember when we talked about the Golden Lily? A lot of this gold was transported to Japan, some was buried, and a large portion was used to mint currency in the puppet state of Manchukuo in northeast China. Because of this, they thought that there might be 1,000 possibilities, that the emperor might be shocked, so many of their buildings and shrines were designed to face Tokyo. And when I saw the information, I suddenly realized that the design of the palace in Manchukuo was also facing Tokyo. The emperor's bedroom was designed to face east, so that he would always be facing Tokyo in worship. Moreover, if you look at the design drawings of the palace, it's in the shape of a Y, an asymmetrical Y, a twisted shape, like a twisted spine. If you look down from the sky, it looks like a spoon, an irregular one. All of these aspects are subtle tricks and clever designs by the Japanese in terms of feng shui, making you feel uneasy within this kind of architecture. Some people might say, no way, the Japanese wouldn't be that wicked, would they? Please look at how symmetrical and magnificent their own headquarters are. They also have a building called the Court of Justice, built like a bow and arrow, completely like a bow and arrow when viewed from above, just like the song Jay Cho sang, something about a bow and arrow being launched. Why didn't they build the palace in Manchukuo like that? It was only 6 meters high, and the main gate was wide enough for 8 horses to run through. Why did they build it so narrow, like a cave? Bye bye.